Amateur Traveler, episode 843. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about hippos and giraffes, shoebills and waterfalls, chimpanzees and gorillas, as we return to the country of Uganda. This is Chris Christensen from Amateur Traveler. Let's talk about Uganda. I'd like to welcome to the show Jagdeep Sahni, a world traveler from the San Francisco Bay Area who's come to talk to us about Uganda. Jagdeep, welcome to the show.
Hey, Chris. Thanks. I'm thrilled to be here, share my enthusiasm. Big fan of your show for a while. A quick shout out to Justin Barnes for the Big Island and Tenerife episode, Susan Metnosky for Guatemala, and too many others to thank.
Excellent. And what was your connection with Uganda?
I'm a wildlife lover and known a close friend from Kenya for a long time. And going to Kenya last year opened my eyes to Africa. So I went back to Uganda very quickly after that.
Excellent. And why should someone go to Uganda?
So it's really the big selection of landscapes and natural beauty. If you're a wildlife or nature enthusiast, it packs a big punch with a broad selection of habitats. You see the savanna, wetland swamps, lakes, the Nile River has a big presence, and of course the rainforest. With wildlife, Uganda is most famous, as you might know, for primate viewing, especially sure. The endangered mountain gorillas in the rainforest. Mm-hmm. But you can see the big five in Uganda. So to summarize, the big reason to go is really the variety of safari experiences, game drives, walking safaris, forest treks, boat safaris, hiking. I describe it as in terms of your experiences per dollar or your experiences per day. Uganda is very compelling.
Excellent. And we're going to get into this, but you say per dollar. I think we've talked often about the high-end safari experience. It sounded like you were going for something a little more affordable.
Yes. So I'm mid-range, so okay. Definitely not campsites, but definitely budget lodging and a mix of both cottages as well as tented okay. camps. And yeah, so driving versus flying makes it more affordable, but I was right. not slumming it by any means. Some of the lodges were very comfortable.
Excellent. And what kind of itinerary are you going to recommend for us?
Yeah, so I would start at the capital, Kampala. And the reason for that is I met a few people at the mountain gorilla tracking who landed in Kigali in Rwanda mm-hmm. and made their way across the border for the gorilla tracking and really didn't experience the rest of Uganda. So I would recommend landing in Kampala. The airport is based in a town called Entebbe.
I remember Raid on Entebbe. I've seen that movie.
Yeah, it's a good-looking arrival town. It's on the shores of Lake Victoria, which, as you mm-hmm. might know, is the largest lake in Africa. And then a good bookend town where visitors spend the night of arrival and the day before departure. However, the itinerary I'm recommending is getting a head start to your Ugandan adventure by heading out right after you land. So what had happened was I worked with my tour operator, Home to Africa. And when I saw I had 4 hours of daylight upon arrival in the early afternoon, I asked if we could get going and started driving to northwestern Uganda to the Ziva Rhino Sanctuary about 4 hours away. So that was the first stop.
Okay. So you say Zebra and Rhino Sanctuary.
So the name of the is Ziva, Ziwa.
Ziva, okay.
Yeah.
I'm thinking the zebras were doing pretty well last I was there, so I knew I was missing something. Okay, got it.
Yeah. I also wanted to take this opportunity to apologize in advance to my new Ugandan friends if I've mispronounced names in the rest of this conversation.
So you went up to Ziwa?
Yeah. Went up to Ziwa, and as the sun was setting, we arrived there, spent the night there. And one thing to note is that was my first exposure on arrival to the friendly nature and the big smiles of the Ugandan people. The gate guard and others at the gate were indulging some friendly banter with my driver guide, Danny, for about 5 minutes. When I asked what this was about, he said they were just giving him a hard time for coming in late in the evening. So from that point to the rest of my trip, I never saw a frown or heard a raised voice. So really, tons of smiles. Yeah. So at this rhino sanctuary, rhinos are sadly extinct in Uganda due to poaching. So this sanctuary was established with a cattle farm being converted to this sanctuary in 2005, starting with about 6 southern white rhinos. And the program turned out to be quite successful. Today, there's 35 plus rhinos. I think my ranger guide said 36. So the plan is to introduce them back into the wild, like national parks like Murchison. So it's jointly operated by a private landholder and the Ugandan Wildlife Authority. And it's not small. It's 27 square miles behind an electric fence. So I arrived there, and I stayed at the Obama cottage. So these cottages were named after the rhinos, and Obama was the first rhino born in Uganda in 27 years. And he got his name because, like the U.S. president, his father was from Kenya and his mother from the U.S. She actually was donated by the Disney Animal Kingdom. So that's...
Okay.
Yeah. So staying at the lodge that night really paid off because it allowed me to experience the sounds of nature and wildlife versus traffic mm-hmm. in Entebbe. So I woke up in the morning and I had a porch and I couldn't quite see it clearly, but in the dark I could hear a large animal snore. And I wasn't stepping out of the safety of my porch. In any case, you aren't allowed to walk around at night without a guard or staff. So you flash a headlamp or you pre-arrange a pickup and a ranger comes out to get you. So, yeah. So it turns out it was a rhino along with a calf in the distance. So, yeah, good reason not to step out and venture out on your own. But yeah, I did two activities at Ziva at the sanctuary. The first one is started at sunrise before sunrise for the 6 a.m. shoebill trek and a canoe ride. There's a neighboring swamp called Lugago. So that's where this trek through the swamp is along with the canoe ride. So the shoebill is one. I'm not a bird watcher are big mm-hmm. on it, but it's one of the top five desirable birds for bird watchers. Very few remain and very few are found in very few places. Been difficult for scientists to classify. It shares traits across storks and pelicans, but it can be described as looking scary looking and goofy looking at the same time. The scary looking comes from the fact that it looks prehistoric, something out of Jurassic Park. So people travel all over to see this rare bird. I was there more for the sunrise and the walk through the swamp. So much fun, right? Put on the rubber boots, trek through the swamp at the magical sunrise over the wetlands. And I don't care much about birds, but I saw 5 shoebills that morning, and I was told that's very uncommon. So the sunrise was spectacular. You get to see lots of birds at eye level. And walking through the wetlands and tons of birds. And then it finishes up with the canoe ride through the swamp in a boat. It's not a dugout canoe, but a modified boat. So a chance to see more birds and enjoy a canoe ride.
Are you canoeing there with the crocodiles and the hippos too, which I have to ask since you're in Africa? Or?
No, there are no crocodiles or hippos in the swamp. I'll have to wait for my Botswana adventure for that.
Got it. Okay.
I haven't been to Botswana, but in the pictures I've seen, the steering was done manually using a long pole. Yeah, so on the swamp tour in the wetlands, one notable thing I enjoyed watching was papyrus water plant. And there's tons of them. And I recall, that was my connection to Egypt. I'd been there a while ago. Leaves from this very plant were used by Egyptians for the very first writing material. And I mm-hmm. recall bringing a souvenir back from Egypt. So that was very cool to see those plants at eye level.
Very cool.
Next was my breakfast break with my first taste of the Ugandan Rolex. This is, I would describe it as an Indian roti or chapati with an egg omelet inside of it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, my guy Danny joked with me that Ugandans don't wear Rolexes, but they do eat them.
Okay, I've not heard of a Rolex, but it's a rolled, it's like a burrito. But more rolled.
Yeah, it's like a burrito with Indian bread with omelet inside.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah. Unexpected treat followed to the delight of the guests. 3 rhinos came up for grazing right by the breakfast pavilion. So that was a lot of fun to have them join us and observe the safety of the pavilion. Again, at the sanctuary, the next activity was the rhino trekking. Mm-hmm. So a ranger guides you on foot, typically following a family of rhinos as they go about their day. So a ranger guide keeps you at a safe distance. Obviously, they understand. They use things like distance, giving the animal the space. They look at things like, being the wind and being, I guess, not in their smell path, if you will, and things mm-hmm. like that. So it was a real treat to walk and follow the rhinos across the savanna landscape. At one point, I was able to sit on the savanna floor about 50 to 100 feet away from the rhinos, taking in the sights and sounds. A lot of fun.
And what is a safe distance for rhinos?
So because the guide ranger kept me about 100 feet.
I'm thinking of closer than I was thinking. Okay.
Yeah. And also note that these rhinos, while this is not a zoo, this is a sanctuary, these rhinos are habituated to humans, but it's important to give them their space, right? So they keep you safe.
I'm just thinking, I was looking at their website and they say the rhinos are 350 stone, which means absolutely nothing to me, but that's over 2 tons. So, and they can run, I think, 35 miles an hour. So I was surprised that 100 feet was actually a reasonable distance. I think we kept further from them in the wild when I was in Africa the one time I saw rhinos in the wild.
Yeah. I think they have places where you can stand in safety of enclosed area where you can. Mm-hmm. So the rangers know what they're doing. And I was following the ranger very carefully.
Okay.
Yeah, so the good thing to note is that the rangers take really good care of these rhinos. They have rangers assigned to their safety from poachers, and also rangers assigned to capture detailed data on them. So things like eating habits, behaviors, changes, they're thriving. So that's the good news, right?
Good. And these are white rhinos, as I recall.
These are southern white rhinos, yes.
Southern white rhinos, which is not the color, but okay.
Yes. Yeah, that's the square lip and less aggressive behavior like, compared to the black rhinos.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay. Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and less shy than the black rhinos. Those are more elusive. Yeah. So that was my adventure at the Ziva Rhino Sanctuary on the morning after my arrival.
Where to next?
Yeah. So from there, traveled up to Uganda's largest reserve, the Murchison Falls National Park. That was about a 3-hour drive from Ziva. And yeah, the park gets its name from past president of the Royal Geographical Society, when it was discovered by an explorer, entered through a park gate. And from then on, the first habitat I passed was dense forest. And then driving through that for about, 50 kilometers, and then that dramatically changes to savanna grasslands as we make our way to the top of the falls, where the Murchison Falls National Park gets its name from. So the Nile, the Victoria Nile has a big presence here. It bisects the park and continues onto Lake Albert. And what's special about these falls is the falls were created when the Nile River is forced through a 25-foot narrow channel. That creates enormous water turbulence and activity, like a boiling pot. So this is billed as the most powerful waterfall in the world. So there's tall waterfalls and there's large waterfalls. This one is unabashedly powerful.
Okay.
Yeah, don't miss the hiking opportunities of the falls. A ranger has to accompany you because you're still in the wildlife park. But that's a good thing because you also get introduction to the park and history. But from the top of the falls, there's an uphill climb that leads you to really spectacular views of not just one, but another fall. So years ago, a second fall was created called Freedom Falls, which is visible only from the hike. So you can't see it from the parking lot.
Okay.
So I recommend the hike highly. It's a bit of an uphill climb, but gets you closer to the falls, gets unique views, and also the classic getting closer to the falls and getting drenched in the mist and all that. Yeah, there was another hike that was closed due to a landslide, which really goes all the way to the bottom. And I would recommend folks check on it next time they go if that's open. But if I had the opportunity, I would have hiked all the way down into the base of the falls. So.
Okay.
Yeah. I saw locals picnicking at the falls with the ice chest cooler, and I immediately regretted even eating lunch already at Masindi, which was a town just outside of it. It would have been a lovely picnic spot for lunch, so my recommendation is don't miss it.
Okay. Well, and you say you ate lunch. Are you doing this with a rented car, with a car and driver? Or you mentioned driving.
Yes, I was in a 4x4 Land Cruiser, which is a typical vehicle for safari game drives. And yeah, I was with my driver guide throughout this trip. So he was doing the driving and the guiding. And while we're talking about that, I would definitely recommend the 4x4. Some tour operators offer a minivan with a pop-up rooftop. I would encourage folks to think about just spending that a little more for the 4x4, much more comfortable.
Okay. Got it. And you were there what time of year? I don't think we mentioned that.
We were in February, which is still the dry season. So very popular time.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So after the visit to the falls, we're in the park. So it's became time for the evening game drive before sunset. So a beautiful savannah grasslands landscape dotted with acacia trees. Saw a good amount of wildlife, antelope-wise, the Ugandan cob and oribi, which is different from like the Mara in Kenya. And for predators, saw four lionesses, a green python. So those are some of the sightings. I would say on the game drive in Murchison, don't miss the Rothschild giraffe, which is one of the very few places you can see them in the wild. And these giraffes are identified by the white stockings type look because they have no markings on their lower feet.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm not familiar with that giraffe.
Yeah, so never a bad safari drive if you can see giraffes.
I agree.
That was to the end of the evening at sunset, and I stayed at a town called Pakwach, which has a bunch of lodging not too far from the park gates, maybe about 10 to 15 minutes from the Tangi Gate. And so that's another thing I wanted to point out. In Kenya, I insisted on staying inside the park because I wanted to be the first vehicle out at sunrise or sure. at the crack mm-hmm. of dawn, because that's where the animals are most active. In Uganda, you can get into the park pretty early, so you don't have to worry about lining up outside the gate. So I would say it's okay to stay outside the park and in the lodging, and that's what it's catered to, just outside the park gates.
Do you have a place that you would recommend just outside the park, or...?
Yeah, I stayed at a pretty delightful place called Fort Murchison. And I think it's in between a budget and mid-range lodge. It's close to the river. Yeah, I enjoyed my stay there.
Okay, and that's a lodge?
It's a lodge, although I stayed in a safari tent.
Got it.
I stayed 2 days in Murchison Falls National Park. Even the daily drive to the park gate from Pakwach was a lot of fun. The wetlands on both sides of the road, and I regularly saw elephants on both sides of the road, so that was very special. Yeah, there you have it, Chris. Just so this, in one long day, this is what I'm talking about, the variety in Uganda. I saw dense forest, savanna grasslands, the River Nile, and wetlands. So in one day, I did a swamp sunrise walk, a savanna rhino tracking safari, a walking safari, a hike along the Nile, and a classic savanna game drive.
And we're just getting started.
We're just getting started, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so the next day was about the game drives in Murchison, and what I would point out was special about this day was a boat safari in the afternoon. Boats go up towards the falls, upriver along the Nile, and to give you a view of the base of the falls, it's about a 2 to 3 hour boat ride. And what's special about it, of course, is tons of sightings of elephants and hippos and lots of birds. Uganda is really great for bird watchers. I'm not one much of a bird person, but you have to appreciate the variety and the beauty. And a guide on board identifies the birds, so you get a lot of help. Yeah, my tip is have your camera ready for that classic shot of the hippo big yawn. And I was still eluding me, but I want to get that, so keep your camera out. For the sunset, given the park is so big and not that crowded, I would recommend switching off the car engine, parking by the side, and simply listening and taking in the sights of the savannah, and create your own sundowner, right? And enjoy the sunset. So I spent 2 nights outside of Murchison and would recommend the same. And again, on the budget lodge, just to give you a sense for the listeners, but while it may be called a budget, I was offered a cold towel on arrival and enjoyed 4-course dinners.
Okay.
From there, left at sunrise to go through the park to the Budongo Forest Preserve for chimpanzee tracking. Uganda is big for primate watching, and chimpanzee tracking is a great introduction to mm-hmm. the gorilla tracking that's to follow, which I kept for the grand finale. The Budongo Forest Preserve provides guided tracking of chimpanzees. These, again, similar to the gorillas, have been habituated to humans, and the good news is the walking in this forest was level terrain, so it makes it easy. And the probability of finding the chimpanzees is actually very high. The difference is the chimpanzees are mostly on the trees, and those on the ground keep moving very quickly. So your guide helps you follow them. So you're walking a lot. You're trying to keep up with them.
Okay.
Yeah. And similar to the gorillas, which we'll talk about, a tracker goes out in advance and by radio communicates the location of the chimpanzees to your guide. So that's how they find them.
Okay.
Just a couple of noteworthy things about the chimpanzee trek. One of the things is if you look long enough in a chimpanzee's eyes or their face, it starts to feel like a human is looking back at you, right? And the second thing is, since it's dense covered forest, it's tough to take good pictures. So make sure you leave time to enjoy the hours with your eyes and ears as well.
Okay.
From there, after the chimpanzee tracking, we drove to the Queen Elizabeth National Park. So that's another major park in Uganda. And starting in the northern part of the park, there's a water body called the Kazinga Channel that connects Lake George and Lake Edwards. And boat safaris are very popular here. One other thing to note is this park is framed by the tall mountain chain called the Venzori. So that was really special and different compared to Murchison. After a good night's sleep, game driving the safari next morning was a bit disappointing with little wildlife spotting. That's how game drives can be sometimes.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, but there was much more to follow. Again, that's that variety, right? Experiences per dollar. I would recommend the boat safari again, which I did early afternoon. These boats in Queen Elizabeth are smaller compared to the larger launches at Murchison. So okay. More of an intimate experience, and also allows for closer viewing of the animals. And the bird species are richer. A lot of fun to be out in the water. Again, tons of hippos, buffalo, and elephants to see besides the birds. Sadly, the elephants were quite skittish in this park and moved away quickly when the boats arrived. I was told it's due to past experiences with poachers and snares. So that's unfortunate.
Yeah. Now, you drove from Fort Murchison down to Queen Elizabeth National Park. That looks like that's quite a long drive.
That was the longest drive we did in this trip. So that's, that was the longest drive.
Something like all day.
6 or 7 hours? Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Got it.
Oh, by the way, I'm glad you asked me, Chris, because I did a picnic lunch on the drive. There's a point where you hit a bunch of tea estates. Very beautiful. So did a picnic lunch there.
Oh, interesting.
Okay. Yeah, very enjoyable. So I would recommend to your listeners, anybody who does this journey, to pack a lunch and find a shaded tree along the tea estates and enjoy it there.
Okay. Yeah. Excellent. You talked about the game drive being disappointing. I think of some of the actually most memorable game drives I've been on where the first 3 hours, nothing happened. And we don't talk about that much on when we're talking with our friends about the game drives. We don't talk about that part of it. We talk about the other part, and then we ran into a whole group of Cape Buffalo that were surrounding us or something like that. Those are the memorable parts. But yeah, the animals are not always predictable.
Yeah. And a quick aside, Chris. So the fact that I'm not a bird watcher and I saw 5 shoebills, right? And then my guide, Danny, was telling me that he had a past guest who was a hiker and she didn't really care that much about wildlife. And when they entered the Shasha sector of the Queen Elizabeth, they saw a leopard. That leopard allowed them to escort them for a long way in the path. And she sat back down because she really wasn't interested. And as for animal lovers, the leopard sighting is very special.
Yes.
So take what the game drives give you.
Yeah, we watched a female leopard try and dissuade her female cub that it was time for her to move on. And so she kept walking away from the daughter. Oh, we watched it for, an hour and a half. These two leopards were, just gorgeous animals. But I've been on other game drives or safaris for a week and never seen any. So you really do have to just rejoice in the things you do see.
That's right. So on the boat safari, just to finish up, another thing that was special to me was you see clusters of palm trees and papyrus trees. That kind of transported me to Egypt. So I was just reminded of kind of the views of the Nile there. So again, quite special.
Okay.
Yeah. At Queen Elizabeth that night, finished up, again, another long, busy day, finished up with a night safari, and finally rewarded with 2 male lion sightings. And this time, one of them with blood on his paws, licking itself clean. That was quite special.
With the night safari, so the typical night safari that we've talked about on the show before is you're going out there in a safari vehicle with a spotlight. Now, that I assume this is that sort of typical thing. We have heard now of some people who are going out with night vision, and I think that's things are maybe shifting that direction, but I'm still expecting the spotlight.
Yes, this was a spotlight and also great value. You're accompanied by a UWA ranger. So again, I would recommend this highly. Great experience, great value.
Yeah. Okay.
You mentioned the spotlight. One tip is, don't get in front of it in your enthusiasm to take a picture, because insects are attracted to the spotlight and they'll swarm you very quickly.
Yes. Okay. I would also think, like when you're doing a chimpanzee trek, for instance, through the underbrush, that would be another time to make sure you have your DEET on or your long sleeves.
I was there during the dry season and I didn't see mosquitoes that much. Although I did wrap myself in insect repellent. But yeah, so it's a dry season, didn't really experience it.
Okay.
So that was the night safari. And the next morning in Queen Elizabeth was exploring a different part of the park at the Ishasha sector. When you read about it, the guidebooks really oversell the tree climbing lions. but not consistent. When I was there, the lines had actually crossed over to the Congo, I was told. So I didn't really see that. So I saw the fig trees minus the lions. So I saw the classic shot of the lions, but minus lions, I saw the fig trees.
Okay.
Yeah. But this section of the park is not very visited, had very few tourists, and I had it almost all to myself. And this part of the park really feels like the Serengeti or the Mara. It's a vast expanse of savanna landscape as far as I can see. So you put it dotted with the acacia trees. So it's the classic savanna, and you have it all to yourself. So rejoice.
Got it. I have a fondness for that landscape.
Yes. And of course, it's not going to have the density of the wildlife as in the Serengeti. But yeah, it's minus the crowds.
Okay.
Yeah, the Shasha sector, I didn't have time, but I would recommend spending at least a night there to enjoy this more remote part of the park.
Excellent. Where to next?
From the Shasha sector, it was finally time to drive to the rainforest for the grand finale, gorilla trekking in the windy, impenetrable national park. So the name itself has considerable gravitas, as you can imagine. So again, just driving there is the sheer diversity of Uganda in display. I was in savannah, as I was talking about it, Ishasha, and within 2 or 3 hours, we were in rainforest, mist clouds and all, so very special.
Now, by this point, you've nearly gone all the way from the south all the way to the north and then all the way back down again to the south. So not a big country. You've traversed a good percentage of it.
Yes, it was a northwest trajectory and then along the west and then back to Kampala, yes.
And then you've been coming down really on the border with Congo. You mentioned the lions went over into Congo. You've been coming along the border with Congo.
That's right. The Shasha sector borders Congo. And in fact, my guide Danny showed me the river and he said Congo's on the other side.
Yep.
And as animals, these boundaries are man-made. The animals don't really know the boundaries.
Right.
They go back and forth.
So you're in the impenetrable forest.
Yeah, between the impenetrable national park. Yes, there's 4 sectors in this park where gorilla trekking starts, and your tour operator will arrange for accommodation closest to the sector where you have the permit for the gorilla trekking.
Okay.
And I spent the night close to the Ruhija sector, which is where my permit was, where I was doing the trekking. And the lodge I stayed was Broadbill. I had really great views of the rainforest, looking out for it, and then realizing that the next morning I would be within it, right, not watching it from above. At the lodging, the sense of anticipation among the guests was clear. Everybody's excited that evening about the adventure to come on gorilla trekking, as with the range of accents, right? So a lot of people travel from different parts of the world to experience the opportunity to see the gorillas in the wild.
Sure, yeah.
The gorilla tracking starts at about 9 a.m. You show up at about 7:45 for orientation. There's a welcome entertainment from the community, some preparation and orientation from the UWA folks. If you're missing things like a face mask, which is mandatory, by the way, when you get to the gorillas, and that's to protect them from transmitting any human diseases, realizing they share 98.4% of our DNA. So that's an example of something. If you're missing one, they'll provide you that. Gardening gloves, just like you saw Sigourney Weaver wearing them in the movie Gorillas from the Mist, right? When she portrayed Diane Foster, things like that. Walking sticks that you'll be offered, take it. They were super helpful.
Okay.
Yes.
Because you're going uphill.
You're going uphill. You're going uphill and then you're coming downhill. You're stepping on ferns, slippery ferns. You're stepping on ground. So you want to pick the spots that are where you can set your foot down, knowing that you're not going to sink or slip.
Okay.
You get the orientation, there's some entertainment from the local community, so you get a chance to interact with them. From then on, I think the reason the gorilla trek starts at about 9 is because the trackers who set out a daybreak get time to track the gorilla families and communicate their location by radio, which determines the starting point for where we start. So there's 8 trackers or 8 guests and accompanied by 2 armed rangers, and the reason they're armed is for our protection, largely from the forest elephants. And the idea is to fire warning shots in case to scare them off. But I'm sure the trackers do a good job of making sure they're not in the vicinity. 1 armed guard is in the front and 1 behind, and there's 8 of us along with a ranger guide. So that's the team that sets out to visit 1 gorilla family.
Mm-hmm.
Just a couple of tips. Good hiking shoes are a must. And also long socks. Not everybody wears long socks, but they're essential to tuck your trousers in. Ants can't get in during the hike, so that's important.
Okay.
Yeah, so good shoes and long socks to tuck in your track. I also would recommend zippered pockets. And the reason for that is if you lose a phone or a wallet or anything on the rainforest, it is just gone, right? There's no chance of finding it. It's so dense. So if you trousers with zippered pockets, I would recommend that as well. So our group of eight was privileged to visit the Makiza gorilla family, which had just welcomed a two-day-old baby added to the family. So just it was born on Valentine's Day, actually. So seeing that two-year-old was going to be our special moment. The trekking follows. This turned out to be about a five-hour round-trip hike. And so fairly strenuous because you're going uphill in the rainforest and it's uneven terrain. There's vines that keep tripping you up. And sometimes there's trails and sometimes the rangers cut through the brush to carve out a trail for you. But certainly a challenging hike because it's uphill and downhill from there. The views are just majestic. I would say the trackers, the guide, the rangers work really hard to make sure you have a good experience. So once they find the gorilla family, that's when you set aside your backpack with your water and things like that and put on your face mask. And from there, you are guided to the gorillas and then you spend an hour with them. It's fairly active in the sense that you're following them along. We saw the patriarch of the family, the silverback, which is this nearly 500-pound male gorilla and called silverback because of the gray in the back denoted by its age. And yeah, really majestic. And of course, the baby gorilla being protected by the watchful mother and then several sub-adults. A combination of gorillas climbing trees and also moving on the ground. And really munching on the leaves surrounded by a buffet all the time. I was joking with one of my fellow trackers that luckily for us, these guys are vegetarian. Otherwise, there was 2,000 pounds of collective meat arriving for them. You get an hour to spend with the gorillas really to observe their behavior. And when the silverback and others look at you and make eye contact, it's both frightening as well as really special because it feels like a human is looking at you. And it's almost like describing you're visiting another human family. It almost feels that way, watching them go about their behavior.
And what kind of guidelines do they give you in terms of your interaction? You're allowed to make eye contact, it sounds, but are there things you're not supposed to do?
So things you're not supposed to do is, obviously, you need to have that mask on and keep a certain distance away.
What kind of distance?
I think it's 30 feet, but the gorillas don't know that. So they move.
Right.
They keep moving closer to us and around us. So sometimes you're watching some gorillas and you hear rustling behind you, and there's another gorilla moving past you very quickly. So that's really the guideline. Otherwise, and the other one is when the gorillas start to vocalize with each other, they're very loud, as were the chimpanzees. So the guide really quickly shouts saying, stay calm, they're just talking to each other. So they sound really angry, but so really listen to the trackers and the guides. Yeah, they guide you as they go along.
Okay.
The gorillas are habituated to humans. They're really wild, but at the same time, they're used to humans. Very gentle giants. And the trackers do a good job of trying to clear out branches and to make sure you get a good view. And we saw a really special view of the mother gorilla turning over and we saw the baby on her chest. And that picture was captured by the UWA on Twitter and it came from our group. So very special.
Very cool.
So my summary on the gorilla trekking is it's hard to be disappointed. My suggestion is think of it as a summary experience. So don't just think about that $700 permit for an hour with the gorillas. Think about it as the views, the adventure of creating new trails, the hike, just the whole package. One special delight for me was in technology, we use the term trailblazers. The guy and rangers were really using machete-like tools to carve out new trails. I'd never seen that before. So it was an Indiana Jones kind of moment.
Excellent. And I think that's your itinerary from where you headed back to Entebbe or...
Yeah, that was my itinerary. After that, headed back to Entebbe. I would say leave plenty of time to account for traffic, especially when you read the outskirts. One other thing to point out on that drive back is my guide Danny pointed out that this is the land of milk and honey. And what he meant by that is you see the longhorn Ankole cows. Mm-hmm. So those are quite unique. It's pointed horns. So that's a milking kind of community. And then the second thing is you see several towns on the way that have beekeeping as a trade. So you see honey on sale along the highway. So that's what he meant by this is the land of milk and honey.
Okay. What would you do differently if you were to do this trip again, knowing what you know now?
I would do that picnic lunch at the Murchison Falls, and I was able to stretch my 7 or 8 days as much as I could, but I would try and stay one night in the Ishasha sector. I mentioned that earlier. And of course, if people have more time, the three things I did not get to do is side trips would be post-guerrilla trekking. It's common to spend a day or two in Lake Bunyoni for rest and relaxation, the opportunity to swim in the lake and taking in beautiful views. For adventurous folks in the water, there's class 4 or 5 rapids in the Nile at Jinja, which is closer to Kampala.
Okay.
And hiking. So the opportunities for hiking in the volcanic mountains near Gainga National Park is another. So these are things I would consider that I didn't have time for.
Okay. Excellent. Are we ready for our wrap-up questions?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Anything else we need to know before we go to Uganda?
Just, I would say, don't get intimidated about the gorilla tracking permit. I put my trip together in 2 weeks before my travel.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So don't get intimidated by it. The tour operators are very resourceful to help secure that elusive permit. So let them work their magic. So that's one. So don't feel that you have to plan this 6 months out or 1 year out, which...
That's what I was anticipating. So that's good to know.
And the other one is don't forget your flashlight because it's very dark. And if you're in a tented camp and you have to head back to eat and things like that, it's kind of...
Yep.
You need that flashlight. And keep your camera ready and be on alert at least 15 minutes even before you enter the national park because, again, animals don't know the park boundaries. And my most memorable wildlife sightings were just outside the park gates. So at Ishasha, I saw a snake eagle swoop in with a green snake in its talons. And I didn't have time for a camera shot, but I'm going to enjoy that in my mind's eyes for a long time. Yeah.
Excellent. You're standing in the prettiest spot in Uganda. Where are you standing? What are you looking at?
I'm probably in boat safari in the Nile. I'm seeing hippos snorting and one of them maybe doing that big yawn that I managed to capture in my camera for the first time. Bull elephant bullying a sub-adult by the water. And kingfishers with the density of crows or seagulls in a dense area. And of course, the palm trees and the papyrus trees along the fringes of the water and a cool breeze blowing. So I would say that's the one.
Excellent. And one thing that makes you laugh and say only in Uganda.
So plantains, green bananas are big there as part of the cooking. So I would say plantain fritters for breakfast, matoke, which is mashed plantains for lunch, and plantains as far as I can see during your drive.
Excellent. And if you had to summarize Uganda in just 3 words, what 3 words would you use?
Diverse safari experiences.
Excellent. Excellent. Our guest again has been Jagdeep Sahni from San Francisco Bay Area, just up the road from me here. Jagdeep, thank you so much for sharing with us your newfound love for Uganda.
Thanks for having me, Chris.
A special thanks to the patrons of the show who help support Amateur Traveler financially. If you've had a great trip because of things you learned on Amateur Traveler and want to help support the show, then learn more by going to patreon.com/amateurtraveler. I did get the information for the Japan trip for Amateur Traveler for this September 2023, and then also have the information for the Morocco trip next April 2024. If you want to learn more about either of those trips or both, you can go to amateurtraveler.com/trips. And with that, we're going to end this episode of Amateur Traveler. If you have any questions, send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com, or better yet, leave a comment on this episode at amateurtraveler.com. And thanks so much for listening. I got to see one more cathedral.